vision for our company is to have every single person, you know, that we serve to have the quality of life that they choose for themselves. Every single person. We don't want them to be living under a bridge because they have a felony conviction in their background. We don't want them to have a lower life expectancy or to be unable to get the job of their dreams or to not have the relationships they want or to feel stigma when they're walking down the street. So every single person in our society, whether you've been to prison or not, should feel like they belong and have all the opportunity that everyone else has. That's what we want for people.
Welcome to Justice Matters, the podcast inspiring a world where everyone belongs. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Hey everybody, welcome to season two of the Justice Matters podcast. I'm so excited to be back at the table, back here, pumping out episodes. And gosh, guys, it's been a wild start to 2021. There's been a lot of firsts. And for this first episode, we get to talk with our guest in the United States. Her name is Karen Lee. She is the CEO of Pioneer Human Services, one of the largest social enterprises in the United States, providing a wide range of services and running several profitable businesses that serve those that are formerly incarcerated, helping them to integrate into society from housing, from employment and healthcare services. It truly is and was an inspiration to talk to her. But like I said, 2021 was one of the beginning of a lot of firsts. The first woman vice president in United States history. And as we talked about a lot of things that were happening in the US right now, which were really underlying some of the systemic racial injustices that have been plaguing that nation for over 400 years. We started to reflect on maybe some of the things that were happening here back home, and I brought up a statistic that I just want to check at the top of this episode, make sure there's a correction to that. I was talking about incarceration rates of Indigenous Australians here in Australia, and I said that the Australian Indigenous population was, said 20%. What I meant to say, it was 3%. So Australia only has 3% of our population that is Indigenous, yet they make up over 29% of those that are incarcerated here in Australia. And as we made that comparison and we talked a bit about these issues in the show, I just want to make sure that correction was made because, it even more underpins the same issues we are seeing coming to the forefront within the United States, the same issues that we have to face here also in Australia, and how we deal with those that are incarcerated and how we can have a justice system that works in fairness and equality, and I would say in a restorative manner. Another first we had and we talked about in the podcast was the US had its first female federal execution of in the last 70 years. And as we talked about the death penalty and we talked a bit about that issue, Karen asked me and gave me some homework and really gave everybody that was listening some homework to go and watch Just Mercy, a movie that recently that had come out. And I did watch that and it was moving. And I would encourage you guys, if you're impacted by what you hear today, as Karen shares some incredibly inspiring things of the work that is being done, but also the work that still needs to be done, go ahead. Definitely go away. And if you haven't watched it already, watch Just Mercy. It's a book as well that you can read. Guys, it's an honor and privilege to be back with you and to introduce to you this episode with Karen Lee, Pioneer Human Services. Hey, Karen, it is so great to have you on the Justice Matters podcast. Thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, all the way in Washington State. So right now, Washington, D.C. is getting a lot of attention in the news. And I really think, gosh, there's just a lot that's happening in the world right now that's kind of come to the surface that I think really, in a sense, the wonderful work that you do with Pioneer Human Services is really working hard to get to the root of the issues and the problems and provide some amazing solutions. Karen, you work for Pioneer Human Services. I'd love for you to kind of maybe introduce the work that they do and your role for the audience today.
Certainly. My name is Karen Lee, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Pioneer Human Services. And our company was born and continues today on its mission to help people that are involved with the justice system have a great life. It's really as simple as that. In the United States, people that are, we're not like Norway or Scandinavia or a country that has a more enlightened approach to crime and punishment. In the United States, there's still a heavy emphasis on incarceration. And on top of that, we have a racial overlay where Black, Brown, and Indigenous people of color are incarcerated between 5 and 8 times as much as a Caucasian person, a white person. So, and if I'm sure that the listeners have at least heard that out of all the Western countries, the number of people incarcerated in the United States is something like we have something like 90% of the world's incarceration population. So it's a significant problem here in the United States, and we believe that it's just not right. So when a person is incarcerated in the U.S., after that experience, they have a record. And crimes here are misdemeanors and felonies generally, and a felony record, a felony conviction, is like a scarlet A for the rest of your life. Mm. When you apply for a job, when you apply for credit, when you apply for a loan, when you apply for an apartment, one of the first questions is, have you ever been convicted of a felony within the past 7 years?
Wow.
And when a person answers yes, a lot of times whatever benefit they're applying for, automatically their application goes into the trash. If they answer no, and then a background search is done later, they'll be fired, or they'll because they lied on their application. So it's a significant problem. In addition to that, there's quite a bit of stigma that goes along with a felony conviction. And a lot of the people in the U.S. that do have a felony conviction, it's for an act that occurred when they were 15, 16, 17, or 18. And today they're 35, 40, 50, or 60. And we believe it's fundamentally unfair to punish someone for an event that occurred when they were 16 and they've already served their sentence. Mm. We're not even going to talk about sentencing reform today. We're just going to say we're going to assume, for the sake of conversation, that sentencing is fair, and we know it's not.
Well, yeah.
So if you were charged with breaking and entering, stealing maybe a comic book, right? Mm. Well, that's a misdemeanor. But let's say that you were charged with something related to stealing, and you might have been high at the time. You had an 8-year prison sentence.
Goodness.
Then after that, you might have had, I don't know, a year or two of probation. Well, and then let's say you've even paid off all your fines. why then when you're 45 can you still not get a job or you can't have a place to live? We don't believe in that.
No, that's just
so
not right.
Pioneer, we're a social enterprise, which is a nonprofit that takes a market approach to its work, and we have businesses in our enterprise division that you know, donate, for lack of a better word, their profits to our social services. And then our social services have all the services that you would need to help a person transition from interactions with the justice system based on criminogenic thinking or based on substance use disorder or mental health disease. And then to help them progress in their life. So we have programs that run from jail diversion, which is basically programs that encourage people or start their detoxification process. Because, and every time you're serving someone there, they're not in jail. We have residential substance use disorder treatment, residential opioid use disorder treatment, and co-occurring treatment. And we also then have transitional housing. Post-treatment, we have outpatient clinics for substance use disorder and for mental health. And then we have employment training. And then we have the full range of housing and housing support. So we have transitional housing. We have permanent supportive housing. And then we have landlord-tenant housing where you have an independent tenant. So we have all those services, and our results are outstanding depending on the type of service and where that person is in their journey to what we call pro-social behavior in social service terms, or a great quality of life for you and me. But along that journey, you know, our service outcomes are just outstanding, and in our employment programs, our recidivism rates are less than 5%.
So,
we do a lot of good for the people that we serve.
Yeah, I mean, it is incredible. I did a little looking around your website, and I was just like, what don't you do? And I guess you are the largest nonprofit social enterprise within the U.S., which is an incredible, you know, achievement. And we talked a little bit about social enterprises and their role in the nonprofit sector in a previous episode. And I think, you know, it just offers such a powerful, sustainable model for addressing, you know, the need for social impact in our world. What I would love to, I'd love to talk a bit about some of the successes and the programs that you do offer in just a little bit, but I do want to dig in where you started out with, really addressing and highlighting the issues, because as people, it's not until people really truly understand and are become fully aware of the need, the problems that there are. And you know, as we saw last year, the resurgence of Black Lives Matter protests throughout the U.S. for very, you know, in response to some horrific deaths, but that occurred once again. And again, this was a resurgence. This has been an issue that has been around for a long time, but it got to a tipping point that it, you know, quite frankly, many would say just needed to. And so What that highlighted was, and I think a greater awareness, which I think you can speak into, I'd love for you to, of what are the systemic issues that have been there. And I watched a documentary on Netflix. It was called The 13th, I think it was, and it just highlighted the systemic issue of incarceration of, and it made me actually look into Australia here a lot more. And I discovered that 3% of Australia's population is Indigenous, yet they're, I think their number is almost 1/3 of incarcerated 30% of those incarcerated are Indigenous people, and or from Indigenous backgrounds, and that just until those numbers and statistics sink in, like the ones you shared earlier, you're not going to realize we have a systemic problem. This is not just fluke or per chance. And so, can you help unpack just a little bit what is a bit more the issue with incarceration of people of color, black people, and you mentioned Indigenous as well.
So, you know, in the U.S., blacks were slaves up until the Civil War. I mean, there were some free black people, but I would say, you know, less than 1% probably of all the black people in the country were slaves. And so after the Civil War, the slaves were freed. So, and you would think that it would all be, you know, rosy, but it really wasn't, because the South didn't have that source of cheap labor, and it really needed that. And in Congress, there was still a desire to appease the South. Right. They wanted the country to unify, and it wasn't like the Northerners really liked black people. They just didn't like slavery.
Right.
So there was this rise of deputizing people that had formerly been slave catchers, enacting these laws that were easy to impose on black people, and it started this cycle of indentured servitude.
Yeah.
That turned into jails and prisons with the rise of the Jim Crow era. And so its vestiges come from slavery. So part of it is that, you know, a black life is not the same as a white life. So there's over-policing in communities that have dense population of black and Indigenous people, and then over policing leads to being in court more, particularly as a juvenile, which leads to prison sentences, and the next thing you know, it's there's assumptions of guilt, there's lots of research that's done, so all those issues become this big, huge snowball that we have today of mass incarceration.
And what makes that's just astonishing that 90%, let's say, of the world's incarcerated are in the United States. I mean, that policy and what happened just a few days ago with the execution the first woman executed.
The first female.
In decades, yes. I think. Those kinds of policies, and as your organization highlights, then it's not just what happens when you're incarcerated, it's the stigma and the after effects of that for the rest of your life. Like, help me understand, like, how does the U.S. get to that, get there? It's just astonishing to understand. And I know there's no simple answer to this. This is something that people are wrestling with, but surely, I mean, yeah.
It's a snowball effect. Local politicians run on law and order campaigns. Sheriffs run on public safety. So they have to prove that they're doing something good for their communities, and they're going to be tough on crime.
Wow.
And before you know it, tough on crime is, you know, incarcerating 2.3 million people
Yeah.
just in one country at any given time.
Let me tell you about one of our partners, Freedom Broadband. They're an incredible profit-for-purpose business. Freedom Broadband is your all-in-one internet and telephone service provider, whether it's for your business or your home. Now, their internet connection and speeds are simply amazing, and they're in another league when it comes to the quality of their customer service. But here's what really sets them apart. When you switch to any of their services, they'll donate $5 every month to a nonprofit cause of your choice. As the founder of You Belong, an Australian-based nonprofit charity, one of the greatest challenges we face is fundraising. And I think I can speak for almost all leaders in the nonprofit world when I say that being able to have a residual income coming into your accounts to support your work is a dream come true. And like most nonprofits, our work is dependent on the generous support of individuals and groups that share our passion to empower refugees to integrate and thrive here in Australia. What that means is that we spend more time and energy looking for ways to raise support. And what I desperately love to be doing is spending that time and our limited resources developing and growing the many successful programs that we run. But here's where our friends at Freedom Broadband come in. You see, a few months back, I was on a 4G wireless connection at home through one of the largest phone and internet companies here in Australia. And each month I was nervous about going over our usage, getting a nasty bill at the end. And I was working on a lot of the podcasting and videos at home, and the speeds I was getting were just painfully debilitating. And I finally decided to give Freedom Broadband a call. And within 2 minutes, I was on the call with Graham completing my application. And within a week, I had completely switched over to their $79 a month unlimited plan. And I can tell you firsthand, the service has been phenomenal. And I have a direct line to their customer service team whenever I have a question or need assistance. Now the studio and office where I work has switched over to Freedom Broadband as well. We're on their business plan and we haven't looked back. And how cool is this? Little by little, connection by connection, Aussie-owned and locally run Freedom Broadband is now actively supporting the great work of nonprofits in communities all around Australia. Simply by switching your internet to Freedom Broadband, you can help transform the lives of those less fortunate. And that's why I love these guys. And get this, head to freedombroadband.com.au and quote Justice Matters on your application form, and they will donate $50 from the activation fee to support Justice Matters. That's going to enable us to continue this podcast and inspire the world where everyone belongs. That's freedombroadband.com.au. Say goodbye to expensive, mediocre internet with poor customer service, and hello to top-notch internet service and the good feeling of knowing you're supporting a great cause. Join Freedom Broadband today. Quote Justice Mattis and let's partner together with the internet that's helping to change the world.
Gosh. Yeah, it's a huge, obviously, issue and problem, and one that's going to take a lot of effort, a lot of time, a lot of systemic changes to overcome. And I'm excited, though, to hear about organizations like yours that are at the forefront of dealing with that. Talk a bit more about those stigma issues that someone that has been incarcerated, then they've finally earned their freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, can you give us some examples of obviously going for a job you talked about? What other areas of you know, reintegration to society do they really struggle with?
I would say basic services. So housing is key. Mm. Housing is key. And right now in Washington, the state that I live in, but across the United States, housing is not a basic right for people that have a felony conviction. And in fact, the Housing Authority, Department of HUD, Housing and Urban Development, they have regulations that specifically prohibit landlords from public housing projects of renting their units to someone who has a meth conviction, for example, which is just a type of drug.
Right.
So I would say that the very first barrier, when a person, let's take a person who's been in prison for 8 years.
Yeah.
They walk out of the prison door, and if they have a family, they'll go live with their family for several months and try to restart their life. If they had a very long sentence, say their sentence was 30 years, their mother may have passed away while they were incarcerated. Some people have 40-year sentences and they get out and there's no one that still knows them anymore. So they have $40 and they don't have enough money for a down payment. They don't have anywhere to go. And then on top of that, they'll have a list of requirements that they have to meet for their community supervision requirements. So what we do is we offer low barrier housing so they can come knock on Pioneer's door. We also have emergency housing, and we will try to get them housed, but we're often full.
Wow.
And so they don't have to have that big down payment. And then we have to start working with that individual to get identification, maybe a driver's license, maybe get them signed up for Social Security if they've got it, and then make sure that they have the basics of what they need so that they can survive till the next day. And so all those things, if they don't happen for that individual, then that individual may have to turn to crime just to make ends meet the very next day. So they can come to Pioneer, and we have a housing facility. We've got case managers. We have employment counselors. And we can work with that person as an individual to address their specific needs and then help them enter the labor market as appropriate for them.
Wow. I mean, the fact that there's such a wide range of services that they can come at one place is important, because I could imagine having to go to several different places just to try and you know, get the help could, again, be extremely overwhelming if they don't have that support network, like you said, of family or friends.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then, you know, if you're on a family member's couch or a friend's couch, that's not that's not what we would call secure housing or stable housing, because after about 3 or 4 months, that person would expect for their couch surfer to have their own place. So oftentimes the homelessness kicks in about 3 or 4 months after release, because they've kind of burned through all their relatives. Where else can they stay?
Yeah.
And they may have, you know, been denied for so many job opportunities that they start to lose hope.
Oh, yeah.
So at Pioneer, we really work with folks on employment services quite a bit.
Would you say
getting
employment and becoming financially independent has got to be one of the most important. I mean, you talk about housing, having permanency, a sense of security, employment. Again, financial independence. You cannot necessarily get housing if you can't afford to or prove that you have that ability to pay rent or whatever that
means. Yeah, I think the housing is even more important than the employment. Because
why is that?
Housing is a basic service, and you're not going to be able to get employment if you don't have a place. Especially now, it's COVID. People are working from home.
Right.
So it's the housing is probably the most fundamental need we have to address, and getting them attached to benefits is probably the second most important thing. Because, you know, we want to, if a client has unresolved health issues, because it's not great health care when you're incarcerated, we need to get those addressed as well.
God.
Or they're not going to be able to work in a meaningful way.
They're just, it's like everything is just stacked against you.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Absolutely.
It's,
And that's why Pioneer is so broad. People ask me, why is Pioneer so broad? And my answer is that a person is a whole. And what we try to do is to give that person options to address where they are. They may not need every Pioneer service. They might need two services over here and one service over there. But they're going to need some set of services to help them along their way. Mm. And if you offer one service and you don't have another one, or your community doesn't have another one, then that service is not going to be able to fulfill its potential. A classic example is substance use disorder for in a residential setting. So that means that you go to a facility and you become clean and sober in about a 3-month period. Well, when you graduate from that program, you need to go someplace and then have step down outpatient services. So if we do all this work in a residential setting and then release someone into homelessness, what good have we done with those 3 months of residential treatment? What's the likelihood that a homeless person, you know, that is struggling, you know, for a place to sleep every single night will stay sober? That's just not realistic.
No. How long has Pioneer Service, I mean, it did it start so broad, or did it kind of add on these services as it went along?
Pioneer added on. It is probably almost 55 years old.
Oh, wow.
It was started in 1963 by our founders was a man named Jack Dalton, and he was an attorney who was unfortunately convicted of embezzlement. He was an alcoholic, and so he had a prison sentence in Walla Walla Penitentiary here in the state of Washington. And when he was released, while he was in prison, he was very active in AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. And when he released from prison, he and several friends of his from prison decided that they were going to buy a house together, because they had nowhere else to live.
Wow.
And so they bought a house. We have that property still. It's in downtown Seattle, and it was called Pioneer Fellowship House. But they had to pay rent to live there. And so then he got some work with the Boeing company, and that was our very first contract. That's how we became a social enterprise. So the guys, they lived at Pioneer Fellowship House, and then they worked at Pioneer Industries, which had a Boeing contract. And that one Boeing contract with that one house,
wow,
where they all lived together and had AA meetings at night,
wow,
was the beginning of Pioneer.
I love that. It's so good to hear the beginnings of things and how it actually just takes a spark, an idea, one opportunity that someone gives you.
Mm-hmm.
Can be the birth of, well, an organization that is, you know, doing such incredible work in so many areas. That is
yes.
Phenomenal.
Our founder was quite a visionary, and he was a big thinker, big dreamer, and he was able to attract people to his vision.
Mm.
So Pioneer was born, and we've continued to grow with that same mission, which is to assist people that have been involved with the justice system as they reenter society. Mm. Now, that vision has grown since then, because now there's jail diversion and a lot of other things which we didn't have then. So we've extended that focus to keeping people from being incarcerated by helping the, you know, reduce the jail population. But it's all to the same end. We don't want people to be incapacitated by society's judgments when they should be living their life.
Especially if they've served their punishment.
Yes, and exactly.
It's like, why do we have to hold it against them for the rest of their life? I mean, this is, for me, it's this idea of what kind of society we know that just constantly holds everything against everybody. I mean, we teach our children to forgive, you know, and to not, you know, when someone doesn't, if you bring that up in their face every single time something happens, you can't move forward. It's not right. And but I'd love to just dig into the whole, because there's the cure, right? There's how do we address the problem that we have? And you said you're moving into like jail aversion and the importance of actually prevention. And you can't, you need both, right? You need a cure and a prevention.
Yes.
A few months ago, I was awoken at 4 a.m. in the morning and to my car being stolen outside the front of my house. I woke up and I'm like, Sarah, my wife, I said, I think someone's taken our car. And I could see it pulling out and going away. And I just jump in my car and I'm after them. And I'm like trying to find where they are in my neighborhood. And it's quite a tricky neighborhood with lots of little side streets and stuff. You know, I'm on the phone to the police and letting them know. Well, eventually after, you know, a couple of hours, I was just driving home thinking, oh, well, I guess the police will find it at some point. It'll be abandoned or whatnot, or who knows. I actually see my car being driven as I'm driving back into my street. So I just, again, I go on the chase and they just scream off. It was quite an eventful morning. Anyways, the car was abandoned. It had been in a minor incident. It had kind of scraped another car, and I guess they were jumped out and ran away. But the kids were caught. So there was a couple of kids that were caught. One in particular, I think, was a young 14-year-old kid. And there's an issue in this area that we live of young kids kind of doing petty thefts and crimes like that. I received an email after a little while saying, hey, we've got this new criminal restorative justice process where you're going to have an opportunity to sit down with this young person, with the police, and with a parent or social worker, a representative of him. Well, he didn't have any parents that were there. He was living on the street. I tell you this story because I was amazed that there was this opportunity for me to sit down and I was able to sit down, tell my side of the story to this child, let him tell his side of the story, admit that he was on ice that night and was with a group of friends and was, you know, coerced into doing this crime, and he wasn't all that remorseful, but I could tell he was still probably not in a good state of mind at the moment. But we were able to draw up this contract that said, hey, I'm going to mentor you. I'm going to meet with you a couple times a week. We're going to do some, there's a community center down the road, and we're going to go there and do some work together to hopefully avoid that he would just be thrown into the juvenile detention justice system. And then that repeats, you know, that cycle of going in and out, like I had hope, right? Unfortunately, it doesn't end so well because he never showed up to any of the appointments. His phone number got lost, and to this date, I don't know where he is. But it was an amazing, the fact that there was an opportunity for intervention, that there was an opportunity for this young person to come face to face with someone like me. And it was like afterwards, I was talking after our meeting with him, I was talking with the social worker. She says, you know, what we saw in that meeting was somewhat rare. We don't often get to see a glimmer of hope in that child, and to see like they were like able to tell him, look, you're lucky, you have an opportunity to change your your life here. And the fact that it was there was an incredible thing. And I say all that to, you know, just to kind of share how important it is for these kinds of opportunities to be available. It takes hard work. It takes a lot more work. I guess it's just a lot easier for society to say, you've done a crime, let's just lock you up. It's certainly not more cost effective.
No.
And you could talk into that. Avenues or ways are there to kind of employ jail aversion strategies? I'd love to hear some of those.
Well, a lot of it has to do with the place you live, the community you live, and in the mindset of the elected officials that live there. And if the elected officials in the community that you live believe in restorative justice, that children shouldn't be tried as adults, if they're willing to try new ways to teach, you know, children that for whatever reason they are running the streets in that way and stealing cars, then there's plenty of opportunity. So here in our state, I live in the Seattle metropolitan area. It's in King County, Washington. And we have a very progressive prosecuting attorney. We have a progressive King County sheriff. And when those two elected officials really want to see change happen, change happens, particularly the prosecuting attorney. And I've seen it the other way. When the we have some communities that we support, and when their local sheriff or when their prosecuting attorney in particular, if they believe that the constituents want crime and justice, then they will resist alternative sentencing type of programs and restorative justice.
So it's a leadership problem, really, essentially.
It really is, yeah. And what I tell folks is, when you've been a crime victim, and many of us have, unfortunately, and a lot of it for smaller kind of crimes, you know, like what you described, stealing a car and joyriding, breaking into a car. And when those things happen to you, you're pissed and you want something to happen. And what I try to impress on people is, do you want, a life sentence for someone that broke into your car, broke the window to your car? And is there any forgiveness in your heart for this individual? Did you ever wonder why they were living on the street in the first place?
Ask why.
And we may never know, but any way that we can become more forgiving as a society, I think is a good thing. And do we really need to lock people away for life?
Well, doing for us anyway? How's that working for us anyway? Like, until you realize that it's not working, it's not making society safer. It's not cost effective. At every point and way that you look at it, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, it really doesn't. And, the sad thing is that the people that we lock away, they have children. Have loved ones.
Yeah.
And their child then grows up not meeting their father.
Well, let me just say, this young boy.
It becomes a cycle.
This young boy that stole my car, his father taught him how to steal. He saw it. He talked about this. Where's your dad? Well, he's in prison. Okay. Mm-hmm. And what did he do? Well, he was a thief and stole things, and he taught me how to do it. I watched him. I saw him. And you make a great point. Like, what is the generational impact?
It's significant. It's I mean, if you look at the numbers, I don't know the numbers off the top of my head, but something like 1 in 8 African American children have a parent in prison. That's way too many. Mm-hmm. And then those kids grow up without the stability of a parent. So there are so many other things that we could be doing rather than locking people up, in my opinion. And I think about, I talked earlier that Pioneer is a social enterprise and that we have businesses.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the leaders in our aerospace company, you know, just like most companies, we have general manager, we have floor supervisor, we have all these leadership positions, and many of our leaders in Pioneer Industries, had a rough start in life. Mm. They may have had an abusive parent or a parent that taught them to do drugs, encouraged them to drop out of school. And they spent a lot of time incarcerated. And how can they give their gift to the world when they're incarcerated?
Mm. Well, it comes down to what dignity do we place on humans? Do we have categories that we give dignity to, whether it be their color of their skin, whether it be they have a record, or... And it, again, it is astonishing until you, when you come face to face with the reality that is, that you realize how far away as a society we are from there being equality and there being freedom. And I think that is why the reckoning that we're all seeing on TV screens here in Australia and in the world, the frustration and the anguish and the pain that is being displayed, it starts to make sense.
That's right. People are tired of being over-policed. People are tired of having a lack of economic opportunity.
Yeah.
So if everyone has the same opportunity for a great job, there won't be so much frustration.
Yeah.
There just won't.
Wow. I feel so... I want to get a lot more out of you while I've got you. Can I just ask one question? I mean, just because it's so relevant right now, the death penalty. Why do we still even have? Does that still even exist? I'd love to know why that seems to be I know there's varying opinions, but it just doesn't, again, as we talk to, could you share a light on that?
Have you read the book Just Mercy by Bryan Stevenson?
I have, and I know it's been turned into a movie right now, and maybe I need to do some homework and
you
and
watch that movie and you read that book, and that'll answer all of your questions about whether we should have a death penalty.
Wow. Well, that's good homework for our listeners and for me.
Because we shouldn't have one.
Yeah.
But that book and the movie will bring those reasons to light.
Mm. I'm a person of faith, and I follow a person that was crucified and it doesn't compute, at least with my idea of faith, that I would want that form of punishment to be the a form of justice that we even still use to this mm-hmm. day. And it again, it comes back to you said it before. What kind of society do we want to build where justice just means punishment with throwing the key away or execution or just retributive? Or do we want to live in a society where when someone does something wrong, as I discipline my children, my punishment, my whatever discipline I give is in the hopes to restore them, to make them a better human mm-hmm. being, to raise them as to, you know, learn your lessons. There's yeah. consequences. It's not, there's no consequences and you get away scot-free. It's like in the process of there being consequences, let me show you a path to restoration and how you can turn this. And that's where mercy,
mm-hmm.
compassion, empathy, understanding, it is a society, I think, that we've got to look at these issues if we want to
yeah.
build a society that's more just and more mm-hmm. more better.
Agree. Couldn't say it better.
Karen, before I let you go, your journey I think is incredible. And you talked a bit about in the little bio form that was filled out how you had, and I know you're here to talk about the great work of Pioneer, but I would like to just, for our listeners, just to hear a little bit about the incredible journey you've had. And when I saw that your efforts were honored and in an incredible award of being, I have to get it right, I knew I would say it wrong, but to be selected as the Puget Sound Business mm-hmm. Journal Woman of Influence, a prestigious award for any female that can be received within the Seattle area. That's a phenomenal award. And what did that mean for you when you received that?
It meant a lot to me. I looked up to, you know, they that award is only given to a few women a year, and I looked up to the women that were selected before me as just giants.
Really?
Just giants. And just to be a part of that circle of incredible women doing wonderful things in the business community just meant so much to me that it was surreal. You know, it really, because I feel like my career, it's been one where, you know, you give a lot and you don't always get the recognition for, you know, your efforts or the efforts of your organization. And plus, when it comes to helping people, it's so difficult to prove. You don't have, you know, dollars, and you don't have profitability to show.
You don't
how
have a
you
stock,
help someone
a stock price right? for your company.
Yeah, you don't have a stock success. Price. So, you know, so it's so hard. We could have, we're still trying to figure out, you know, what is the best way for us to measure our impact on society.
Oh, but, come on.
But it's really difficult because we might, you know, have been, you know, the only person to rent to someone, but that's what they needed.
Right.
That's, you know, so it was very, it was just a wonderful feeling to be recognized here. So,
yeah,
thank you for mentioning that.
I did. And I wanted to thank you, for not giving up, you know, for taking on a role. A lot of, you know, you've got a law degree, you've a successful career, and to take on a role that serves those in the society that are stigmatized, that are maligned for no, you know, mm-hmm. for that are vulnerable, and to dedicate your career and your to serving others is needs to be honored and recognized when it does. And so thank you for not giving up on this incredible portion of society. That, as you mentioned, have a gift to bring and need to be given the opportunity to give that. So thank you. So I do have one last question, and it's got to do with the theme of the podcast for this season. It's the mm-hmm. second season that we're on, and I've kind of changed the colors, and I went with a yellow, and I thought, because I want to leave on a note where, for me, yellow just has this idea of hope, this idea mm-hmm. of a bright future, of opportunity. And in injustice, so often that's the vision we have to have. You know, it's you can be so neck deep in such, you know, terrible injustices, and mm-hmm. the stories can be harrowing. But it's the vision that you have for hope for the future. And I want to ask you, what's your hope? What do you look onto the horizon for? What gives you hope in the work that you do?
The vision for our company is to have every single person, you know, that we serve to have the quality of life that they choose for themselves. Mm. Every single person. We don't want them to be living under a bridge because they have a felony conviction in their background. Mm. We don't want them to have a lower life expectancy or to be unable to get the job of their dreams or to not have the relationships they want or to feel stigma when they're walking down the street. Mm. So every single person in our society, whether you've been to prison or not, should feel like they belong and have all the opportunity that everyone else has. That's what we want for people.
I love that. I'm so glad you said that and close with that they belong. That's the charity that we started as You Belong, and we wanted mm-hmm. refugees and mm-hmm. those that are in a foreign land to feel that sense of belonging. I love that
yeah.
world where everyone belongs mm-hmm. is so central to your mission. Thank you, Karen. Mm-hmm. Again,
thank
I really appreciate your time, and it's just so wonderful to get to know you. And I really hope our listeners will just dig into this and see how they can be part of the solution as well, wherever they are.
I hope so too.
Mm. And is there any way people can learn more or follow, or other than heading to your website?
Absolutely. I think that they should head to the website, because then they're connected with us. And but we have social media. We mm-hmm. post on Facebook about any injustice that we see. And we also post our success stories. There are tremendous success stories that would bring tears to your eyes if I could tell them all to you.
Yeah.
So come to pioneerhumanservices.org/quiz. And we have a quiz on mass incarceration that we would love for you to take.
Okay.
Test your knowledge of what's going on in the world and see what you know about mass incarceration.
Brilliant. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Karen. Make sure you go to those places, guys, that are listening and watching on. And hopefully we'll get the chance to get in touch again in the future. Take care.
Okay. All right.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Justice Matters. I'd like to take this time to thank my audio-visual engineer, Jose Biotto, for your help in producing the show. I'd also like to shout out to the Patreon community that financially supports this podcast. Guys, thank you so much for your support. You can join them simply by going to patreon.com/justicematters, where a simple donation of $5 a month, you can become part of the Patreon community and get access to behind-the-scenes content and extras that I share just with you. And lastly, there is another really important way that you can help support the podcast, and that's simply by rating it or leaving a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, maybe by subscribing on YouTube. Yes, we are a video podcast as well. Guys, thank you so much for listening in to this episode of Justice Matters. Please come again soon. I can't wait to share more episodes with you. I'm your host, Tim Buxton. Thanks for listening.